shut your mouth. Put on this shirt, it says buns is fun. Let's go get a pizza, forget a run. Cause he's ghost at the gym after he had me. Breast and thighs, he ain't turning down a fatty. He asked for a sandwich, yes daddy. Now they all wanna smash me.
My ego is, my ego is. He said what? He said he don't like it, but the DM say he love it. I say it's all good, boy. Where's your cute cousin? I went to invite him over, but I ain't got no couch. These lazy motherfuckers with my name in their mouth. Steak as breath, they come a high like the south. Well, you better get your girl. We got the on the house. She be getting down. She say that y'all on the drought. Clean stain on that dress. She gon' need that shout. Just like a boyfriend that's staying coming out. No, I'm just playing, baby. Kiss her on the mouth. Now I know what you're thinking. That they some only on the weekend.
Is it Friday?
Cause it's chubby girl season. Listen, I'ma show you how you treat them.
That's right. Huh.
He give me head, then I feed them. Yep. Send them back to her like I ain't trying to keep them. My ego is my ego is.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Bill Konkoleski. Bill has been on this show before, but is back with new and hopefully exciting information concerning the UFO phenomenon. Bill is the Michigan State Director for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, and he has been a UFO experiencer since early childhood, and is the author of the book Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds. Bill was a guest on our show back in February of 2016. However, much has transpired in ufology since then, so let's let Bill catch us up on some of those vital details. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thanks, Dave, for having me back on.
Hey, it's our pleasure. And MUFON has just released its first book of best UFO cases. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is exceptionally exciting. This is something that people have been clamoring for years. People saying all the time, MUFON has thousands of cases coming in every year. You should put out a book, maybe every year, saying, you know, what the best cases were for the previous year. Mm-hmm. Because sure, anybody could go onto the MUFON site and do a search, MUFON.com, and look up sighting reports and sift through them and look for what they think is interesting. But this is a nice, compact, real easy, digested list of the very best cases from the previous year. So this 2018 edition, which just came out and it's available on Amazon or through the MUFON website, it covers 2017. And so I have a feeling that this is probably going to be about the speed that these things come out, which is later in the following year. All the cases from the previous year will be reviewed, and then the best ones will be picked out and itemized for this book. Mm-hmm. And one of the really, really cool things about this book is the index in the back. If you're looking for a particular shape of UFO, if you're looking for sightings in a particular state, if you're looking for particular phenomena associated with a sighting, there's a really, really big index in the back. So if you're looking for a particular type of sighting, you can go right to it. And yeah, it's a great handy tool to have at the back. It's a really quality book. And yeah, I'm looking forward already to the next one next year.
Yeah. So they plan on having this every year?
Yep. That's the plan every year now.
And the index
Michigan.
Is in,
go ahead.
The index is all cross-referenced, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, wow. Remarkably, exhaustively.
Yeah. It's like doing a search.
It's Google. It's so very rare to say that the index is exhaustive and comprehensive, but this one really, really is. So, of course, when I got the book, the first thing I opened it up to and said, look for Michigan cases, you know. Mm-hmm. Michigan has three cases in the book. The one that caught my attention the most was one that happened in Clinton Township last April. Two witnesses saw a UFO. It was a disc shape. And it was flipping end over end, kind of like doing somersaults, this black disc doing these sort of somersaults within a plastic, the description reminded me of a habit trail ball or a bubble. And so this disc was flipping around, going across the sky, while these two witnesses were both in total agreement that this thing was doing this as it traveled across the sky, so... as far as the Michigan ones go, that's the one that sticks with me. But there's, of course, another good couple Michigan cases in there. And some of the cases in there, too, it's not all from the United States. One sighting that was really exciting that was listed in there is from Tehran. Yes, as in Iran. And what the witness reported was, and they not only reported it, but there's videos to go along with it that, of course, aren't in the book. But I had a chance to see some of the video, the cell phone video footage of this, is that over Tehran, there was they thought it was like 6 to 10 glowing orbs suddenly appeared over the city and started doing maneuvers. Mm-hmm. And the city, I guess, being in that part of the world, they were on high alert for who knows what, and they fired the military fired several rounds at these glowing orbs over the city, and the video clearly shows this building, and on top of the building, these guys with this giant gun just firing away. Much like the reports were of the Battle of Los Angeles.
That's
back
what
in the
I was. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of it, eh?
Another one too that really stayed with me is what comes from Pennsylvania, Cumberland, Pennsylvania, where a woman took her dog out. It was about 2 a.m. The dog was getting really agitated, really antsy. And so the owner thought, maybe he has to go outside and go to the bathroom. So the owner goes outside, steps into the backyard with the dog, They had a pool, and the dog did several laps around the pool, just racing around, freaking out, and then stopped and froze in place and stared into the woods behind the house. And then a white disc suddenly appeared, a white giant glowing oval appeared, and they watched it and just sort of stared at it as this disc was just glowing, hanging over the trees in the back. Mm-hmm. And then that winked out, and then the dog ran to the front of the house and started growling. And then suddenly the dog just stopped growling, just stopped. And mm-hmm. so the woman was like, you know, are you okay? Maybe we should go in the house. You know, I'm getting kind of nervous. So she takes the dog inside, and they go to bed. Mm-hmm. When she wakes up, she's got a giant welt on her arm and 5 puncture marks.
Oh, nice.
And she said 4 of the 5 puncture marks, and I had a chance to see a photo of this. Unfortunately, the photo's not in the book either, but the 4 of the 5 puncture marks disappeared in short order, but the other one hung around for a while. And she said that when the swelling on her arm went down, her arm was quite itchy. She doesn't remember anything about what happened or what could have caused that. But, yeah, like in a sort of a small round area on her arm were the 5 puncture marks.
It's amazing how people will just not really remember what the heck happened. They have physical marks. They remember the onset of an abduction. Sometimes the aftermath of the abduction, but very rarely do they have conscious memory of the abduction, but they do have the some telltale physical marks like that. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
Has that ever happened to you?
I have a physical mark on my arm. Yes, certainly from age 7, something that I'm just guessing I probably brought up on your show, but then again, probably many years ago.
Well, remind us.
So when I was 7, I was in bed, and a black sort of void opened up over the top of my bed, directly overhead, and this metal sort of, it looked like much like a shower head, one of the shower heads that's on a metal sort of rope, that sort of a thing,
mm-hmm.
Dropped down out of the ceiling and started whipping around, whizzing around, and shooting off sparks.
Hmm.
And then I felt my body feeling really tingly, highly sort of energized, and I felt that I was being sucked up into the ceiling, and then I found myself in a small room, kind of like a lobby feeling to it, and it had a light that was similar, I guess, to a black light. And there were 2 grays in there in the room with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they led me into another room that had a bed on it, sort of a more like a cube, a rectangular cube, I guess, than a bed. But it was pretty obvious that I got the impression that it was a bed.
Right.
And there was another gray in there, and when the 3 grays sort of connected with each other, they actually left me alone in the room and went into another room.
Hmm.
And in all my life, and I've had plenty of experiences, as I've shared on your show over the years,
right,
I've never been just sort of left alone on board like that. So the 3 little guys went one way, I went the other way. I went out another sort of side door from the room.
Mm-hmm.
I walked down this hallway trying to see where I could go. It ended up in a dead end, and then it turned out they were behind me, following me anyway. They usher me into this side room where they have me sit on a chair that's much like a dentist chair. And although they didn't physically strap me into this chair, I felt like I was magnetized to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a taller gray, the grays that were with me up until this point were about the 3-foot variety, and then the gray that had me in the chair was 5 feet tall. And then it was looking down at me, got really into my face, eye to eye, and said, "Be really good, and you'll get to see the color blue." And I'm thinking, you know, what the, you know, these aliens really don't know people very well. You know, maybe I'm supposed to get a sticker or a sticker or something. You're going to show me the color blue? And then,
No, thanks. So, I've seen the color blue before.
I can laugh about it now.
Yeah, really?
So I'm sitting there, and then I felt this sharp pain on my right arm, kind of in the bicep area.
Mm.
And I look over, and I see a cut had been made. There had been some incision made horizontally across my arm, though I didn't see what caused it. And but when I looked at it, I saw it healing up in front of my eyes, just sort of healing. And then so I looked back up at the gray that was right in front of me, and its eyes switched from a deep black to this bright, brilliant, cerulean blue color.
Hmm.
And it tranquilized me. It mesmerized me. It just put me at complete peace, and I felt just wonderful. And then I woke up in bed the next day.
Hmm.
So I got to see the color blue, and it turned out it was kind of cool after all.
So
there is... Hmm?
I was going to say, so you've never seen the color blue like that before, have you?
No, like that. And the next day, there was even a follow-up. I'm playing in the backyard with this friend of mine. Again, I'm 7. He's 6. Mm-hmm. And we're climbing the trees in my backyard. And my friend still remembers this. So, because we've kept in touch all these years.
Hmm.
And while we're back there in my backyard, this mist rolls into the backyard. It looks like a cloud of some kind just flows right into my backyard, and you know, we're like confused about it. And it didn't smell like anything burning or cooking or anything like that. It was a lot like a just sort of like a smoke machine.
Mm.
And as the mist rolled through, there was a little gray in it, and the gray came up to me and asked me telepathically, am I all right? And I said yes, and it said good. And then it kept going, walking, and the cloud went with it, and it went into the neighbor's yard, and then kept going and disappeared. I had a scar. I noticed the scar the next morning, and I knew when that little thing was asking me, am I okay, that it was referring to at least the scar that I had, and who knows what that I may never remember, I guess.
Hmm.
And my friend didn't see the little gray guy, but he still remembers the cloud, because who wouldn't? You know,
yeah.
The cloud just comes rolling through your backyard.
So this guy, your friend, still speaks to you today?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll be
Yeah. That's, I'm blessed. I mean, it's about 40 years now. So, yeah, I'm blessed. He lived right across the street. Our mothers were friends. And, you know, just that kind of a familial connection almost when you know
right,
him.
Right.
Yeah, I've known him since I was probably 2, I guess. So,
yeah, it's funny the things that you remember from childhood, but something traumatic like that, yeah, you would remember. It's like my sister and my sighting. We will never forget that, you know? And it was just the onset. So you remember these things aboard the craft consciously? This happened consciously, and you remember it the next day? Or did you have to go through a hypnosis or what?
My memories are a blend, is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
I was blessed to have a fantastic person regress me back. It was during the early 90s, 93 in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley Coyne, who was a trained hypnotherapist. She was a state director for Michigan MUFON at the time. Also at that time, she was MUFON's head of abduction research. She very carefully and compassionately did the regression sessions on me. And in my book, Experiencer, Raised in Two Worlds, I go into most of the regression sessions that I had with her. People I know say, well, can you really trust hypnotic regression? One of the things that I point out very early in the book is that my very first memory in life is of age 2, a little gray guy coming into my room.
Mm-hmm.
When I went under regression, I remembered my room differently than I thought that it looked,
mm-hmm.
and is the best way to put it. And I particularly, or specifically, my crib. And then so I thought that afterwards, I'm like, well, that hypnosis was good, but I remembered my room wrong. And then when I described my mother to my mother the regression event, she said that the memory that I had under regression was in fact the correct memory of how the room looked. How I thought I remembered it was incorrect.
Wow.
So regression actually brought out the true details.
Yeah.
Even though I fought him, I'm like, this isn't what my room looks like. I'm going to remember how it really looks like. I'm like, darn it, I can't change the details. But it turned out, yeah, the regression was the accurate memory of it. So for me, that gave me a lot of faith in the process of regression.
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing a show. It'd be a very complicated show, but getting a hypnotist, like someone who works in law enforcement, and asking him if, you know, him or he or she, if hypnosis is a reliable tool in getting, you know, criminology, if that's the word. And I'm sure that they will think that hypnosis is very reliable, and then bring up something like the fire in the sky, the Travis Walton event, where hypnosis, you know, and or better yet, the Hills, Betty and Barney Hill, they were hypnotized and remembered all these things, and just see what they have to say. And chances are they'll find all kinds of excuses where, you know, you can't really rely on it. They think that they experience this, but it was just a dream. They're getting them mixed up and yada, yada, yada. But when it comes to their profession in law enforcement, oh, it's 100% reliable, you know.
And then onto the lie detector test.
Much lie like detector Travis Walton, test, yeah. That would be Travis Walton, the lie detector test, where there were six guys, and they all passed the lie detector test with flying colors. In fact, Travis Walton, I think six or seven lie detector tests he passed with flying colors. But, you know, no. Well, it can't be, therefore it's not, therefore it must be something else. And and then their brain shuts down. And so anyway, don't get me started on that. So anyway, I need to take one moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to We Are Not Alone on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell. And we're speaking with the state director for the Michigan chapter of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, Mr. Bill Konkoleski. Bill, you recently spoke at a UFO conference called UFO Contact, CONTACT, in Houghton Lake, Michigan. I understand that you've decided to make this an annual event. So, go ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That's good. They have decided to make it an annual event. The people that put this together, RJ and Deb DeRusse, as well as Mike Smith, are the chief people that put the conference together, and they had the assistance of a group called MAPIT, which is a paranormal investigative group. And Houghton Lake was beautiful. It was the end of September. So it's Michigan UFO Contact is the official title of the event. And so con meaning convention, but contact sort of a play on words.
Play on words, yeah.
It was a great event. Nick Redfern, Erica Lukes spoke. Michigan MUFON's own Steve Ward was there, John Tenney, Andrea Perrin, and God help me if I forgot anybody. But it was just a wonderful, terrific event, and it was very experiencer friendly. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't sort of a nuts and boltsy kind of a UFO thing. It was for those who feel the vibe of the, you know, the experiencer contact phenomena, And, you know, the hotel was wonderful, and it was on a beautiful lake. And the organizers, RJ and Deb, they had sightings of their own. They participate to a great extent in a lot of the paranormal investigations and conferences and all that. They're very deep into that that scene. And RJ had seen a UFO himself back in 1975, an orange glowing light, very close to the Wurtsmith, the infamous Wurtsmith UFO event back in 1975, when a UFO buzzed a nuclear a base up in northern Michigan and had nuclear bombers. And that was the time of his sighting. Now, Deb, who is the real heart and strength of this event, as well as, again, RJ's great work and Mike Smith's organizational abilities. I mean, this was a great team putting this together.
Mm-hmm.
But Deb, she had her own sighting a couple years ago that she reported to MUFON. And it's you know, no two sighting cases can are sometimes alike. And
right.
In her particular case, she was planning an event that day. And it was called the National Ghost Hunt. And so she was taken off from planning that at about 1 a.m. when she spotted, of all things in the sky, a pyramid,
mm-hmm.
a glowing golden pyramid. And she sort of gave the impression that it was built of like sort of a stripes of golden light.
Wow.
And it seemed to have a solid base. And as she watched, she said she saw it slowly descend. She thought it was quite big, like possibly miles across, possibly even like 10 miles across, like
wow.
Giant.
Wow.
And as the glowing light pyramid descended in front of her, she started to get this very strong tingling feeling, a buzzing sound, and just sort of this, you know, this feeling like she was being affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it was, you know, it left this great, you know, sort of effect on her. And then, you know, she didn't actually, said she wanted to take a picture about it, but, you know, of it, but, you know, it's one of those things in the moment where you're like, oh my gosh, what's that? And then when it's done, you're like, darn it, I should have taken a picture of it. So the light, you know, it slowly descended and, you know, she lost sight of it. And, you know, she went home and she managed to get hold of a friend who was still awake and, you know, talked about it. And then she and I talked about it shortly after she made her report, official report to MUFON. Our chief investigator, Daniel Snow, followed up. And, she was now very, you know, squarely in the realm of UFOs above and beyond all the other paranormal stuff that she's involved with. And decided that Michigan needed a big UFO conference.
Yeah.
You know, that was the direction she went with it. And it was quite an event.
I've heard a lot about the pyramid-shaped UFOs. Is it possible that these pyramid shapes are actually the triangular shape, just at a different angle, and they're seeing them at a different angle?
In some cases, one could think that.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, it's very clearly a pyramid shape.
Uh-huh.
And I can think of a couple examples off the top of my head that of pyramids. You know, the closest one in my mind to what it sounded like Deb described, she didn't necessarily get a negative feeling from it.
Mm.
But in a case where somebody did get a clearly negative vibe from the pyramid they saw was Ingo Swann. If your listeners are familiar with the remote viewer, legendary remote viewer Ingo Swann. So back, you know, he's long deceased now. But back in the 70s, he was working at the Stanford Research Institute. He's one of the founders, really, of remote viewing. And he had connections within secret agencies of the government, and one day one of the agencies asked him, you know, if he wanted to see a UFO. And so Inigo Swan's like, sure, I'd love to see a UFO. So then they started this convoluted journey where he had to be blindfolded, driven in a van to an airport, and secretly flown up to a place where he later understood was Alaska. And him and three agents of the secret agents of the government went out and deep into the woods. He also had to leave anything metal behind, they said, when they went to this location. So they walk out into the middle of nowhere in the Alaskan wilds to this sort of lakefront. And then this sort of bluish purple fog starts to roll across the lake. And a pyramid, of all things, a glowing pyramid appears within the fog. Mm-hmm. And they're watching it, and they're, you know, fascinated by it, and then it starts to shoot off lightning bolts. And wow. Then they took off running. And so then Inigo Swan said to the secret agents, he's like, okay, forget about how you knew that was going to be there, right? Mm-hmm. Why did you bring me there and put my life in danger? And they're like, well, you're a remote viewer. We wanted to know what you would think about it. And he's like, that's not how this works.
Really?
That's not how this remote viewing thing works. Right. You know, there's that word remote in the term remote viewing. Not almost get me electrocuted by this glowing pyramid, you know.
Yeah, next time let me stay at home and view it remotely, right?
I'll remote view you guys getting fried by,
right.
by this pyramid.
Terrible.
But one of the best pyramid cases, though, actually was something that happened here in Michigan. Mm-hmm. It was back in 97. This guy and his wife were on their morning commute. They were on US 23 in the Ann Arbor area, and they were driving north, and they saw this glint in the sky ahead of them as they were driving north. And as they got closer, they noticed that it was a solid object. Mm-hmm. Closer and closer still, they saw that it was a pyramid. They drove up just about under it. The thing was large. The guy said it was about the size of an aircraft carrier. Now get this, 8 a.m. morning commute in the, you know, southeast Michigan, and mm-hmm. this giant pyramid is hanging over US 23. So him and his wife pull over, and all sorts of other people are pulled over, he said. And other people are just driving under it like it's nothing. But so he said the pyramid was mirrored on all four of the sides, black underneath, and it looked like it had a couple spotlights on it. Mm-hmm. But it was frozen, just frozen in the air. And as he was looking at this this pyramid, he saw that it, in fact, had hieroglyphics on it. And you know, and you think, well, that's, you know, well, that maybe that it's bad enough that it's a pyramid, but it's got hieroglyphics. And on that note, I remind people that Roswell, Kecksburg, even Rendlesham, hieroglyphics were reported on the objects. But so they're all watching this thing, giant thing, frozen over this the you know, both lanes of US 23. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it twists a little, it moves, it jerks, it suddenly moves, and everybody lost it, freaking out, screaming, hiding behind cars. And then it started moving around and around, twirling in place, and then it starts moving southbound down US 23, twirling faster and faster and faster, until at one point it shot straight up into the air and they lost sight of it. And at that point, he said two military jets buzzed the area just seconds later. Mm-hmm. A police officer was there, took a police report. I'm still trying to figure out a way to track that down. And then on the radio, a local radio program the next morning, several other witnesses were talking about the show, I guess, apparently. So,
do you remember the date? How long ago this was?
The gentleman could only remember that it was 97. When he spoke to me, it was a few years ago. I want to think it was like 2012 or something. He caught up with me. But I never forgot about it. And the interesting thing is, he told me the story. He left it all on a voicemail to me. And then I switched cell phones, got a new cell phone, thought that I had lost the voicemail, but thankfully I had the forethought to record it and didn't even remember. And so I found it 6 months after he originally called me.
Hmm.
I listened to the recording, and then I called him. So, you know, this is 6 months later, so I'm calling him out of the blue, effectively, at this point. He doesn't think anybody's going to call him back, and yet I do. And then when I got him on the phone, he repeated that story verbatim, exactly as he said it in his voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is some astounding recall right there. That's not somebody who made up a story.
No.
And then had to remember the details later. I mean, that for him to remember, to be able to recall it exactly the way he told it the first time to me was a great benefit to his credibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I've repeated my story so many times, and it's never wavered because I remember it, you know, like it really happened. And people say, oh, it can't be. But it really happened. So
there's and then just if I could share one other pyramid story. The pyramid story itself is not the highlight of this. It's what happened shortly after. But in Ohio, it was the mid-90s. Well, somebody who's working a construction site looked up from his work, and he saw this giant pyramid hanging out at the end of Black Pyramid, at the end of the area, the work area. And then he looked around like, is anybody else here that can see this? He looked back, and it's gone. So that's weird as it is, right? But shortly after, not the same day, he was at home. He lived in a sort of a semi-rural area, and he was woken up at 3 a.m. by this really loud gong. So he said it sounded like just somebody hit the biggest gong in the world, and the house was shaking.
Hmm.
So he's like, what the heck is that? So, of course, he gets up, looks around, can't find anything, looks outside, can't find anything. The very next day, he wakes up and looks out his window, and there's this big 18-wheeler parked at the farm next door to him, and a big white 18-wheeler, no markings, and it had three guys in hazmat suits herding the farmer's cattle and some geese onto the back of the 18-wheeler, and it drove off with them. And so the guy goes to his neighbor and, you know, he's like, what's up? And the guy says, I'm not going to talk about it.
Wow.
And the farmer next door never replaced his stock. You know, he never replaced any of his animals. And, you know, the guy has no idea what happened.
Jeez.
But I always remember that story because it was, tied in with his pyramid sighting.
Yeah. So, in other words, the pyramid is not triangular shape. It has depth. It has four triangular sides with a base, in other words, correct?
Correct, yeah. Especially like the one that I had mentioned over US 23, they were under it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the one that Deb Drew saw, you know, she was able to see under it and see the base and see more than one side of it.
Yeah. Huh.
So, yeah, it's a peculiar shape. Why, you know, if you were thinking of, you know, something aerodynamic, you know, or whatever, I don't know that would be the most logical shape to go, you know, space trotting in.
Right. So, not that we know of, anyway.
Be up with that.
Not that we know of. Nothing aerodynamic that we know of, huh?
Right. Unless once it gets up into space, it's, you know, the pointy end is the front end, and, you know, that helps. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's that wouldn't really, I don't think that would work in outer space. As far as earthly technology is concerned. But who knows what they know, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there are many other pyramid sightings out there that aren't triangle sightings. So, I don't know, somebody out there, you know, got their niche shape.
But I believe that they travel through a wormhole, so space, as we know it, would have nothing
have nothing to do with their craft, you know. It wouldn't hinder any shape craft, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you look at the, you know, the space station up there, it's not like that.
Yeah, dynamic, that's odd looking. Yeah. But anyway, what do you think about the CE5 initiative, or fad, or whatever you want to call it, is popularized by Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project. Familiar with that?
Your listeners are probably familiar. Basically, what it is trying to, at the very least, observe craft coming in, but more specifically, if possible, actually try to call them in, try to will them in, try to signal them in some cases, try to bring them down through whatever means. And I know people that, you know, have claimed great success. Andrea Perrin, who recently spoke at the event in Houghton Lake, she does this all the time, and she's got some incredible pictures of the UFOs that she's called down. And there are other people I know that, you know, have claimed success. And within MUFON, I don't know if you remember Dan, when he had brought his videos out and showed them to the group.
You say Dan? Dan Wright?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, not Dan Wright.
Oh.
Gosh darn, now that you said Dan Wright, I'm just thinking Dan Wright.
Darn me. Anyway. Well, it doesn't matter. Somebody had videos.
He was a great guy, and I feel bad now that I'm blanking on his last name. I have to deeply apologize for that. But it's a type of thing when somebody throws a name in my head, it gets stuck in there. But
sorry about that.
I'll remember it. But he took tremendous videos of the UFOs that he was seeing, and in fact, he had even brought up to Greer's attention, and Greer put it in his most recent movie, Unacknowledged. So, and I was intrigued, you know, by the phenomena. So I was at the MUFON symposium in Vegas last year, and they had said there were two different groups at the event that would allow you to go out with night vision goggles and do a skywatch. And so I thought, oh, this is great. This is a good time to, you know, to do this. And so I decided to, you know, to sign up with one of them. And it turns out both groups decided to combine their efforts and do the event together. And so we went out to this sort of secluded part outside Vegas, our group, a small handful of people. It wasn't like MUFON itself didn't put on the Skywatch. A couple of vendors decided that this is what something they could do for the people that were attending the event.
Right.
And so we went out and as a small group of maybe a couple dozen people, I think, and we went just far enough so that there wasn't any light pollution. And so we were out there looking up at the sky right at sundown. And so they said, you know, this is about the best time to do it, right when the sun comes down, because you can see the satellites. You know, you can see the iridium flare of satellites that are twisting in the sky, and some other aircraft and things like that. So even if you don't see a UFO, you'll at least be able to see some of these, you know, these low-flying, you know, man-made craft. And so we were watching for quite some time. I think it was about an hour and a half of watching these, you know, these satellites and whatever go by. And we had the night vision goggles, and we had the laser pointer. And so after about that an hour and a half, I'm watching, and I see these two bright, and with my night vision goggles, and only with the night vision goggles, I saw these two bright lights traveling really quickly across the sky. And I could see the stars behind them, meaning that they were two different lights. They weren't the same object. And as they flew across the top of the mountain, I'm like, hey, everybody, check this out. There's something going on over here. At that point, everybody seemed to be like kind of wore out from the activity. Nobody was paying attention. I'm like, no, this is different. So the two lights, the light that was trailing the other light, so there was one light in the lead, one light behind, the light that was behind suddenly zipped ahead of the light, the other light, and then zipped back behind it.
Really?
And I was like, wow, this is really something. So I looked and I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And everyone's like, huh, okay, all right, whatever. We're just chilling out and talking now. So anyway, but it was really something. And had I been like Dan Wertman, the gentleman who I blanked on his name a moment ago,
okay,
my apologies to him and his family for that, because he was a wonderful guy. And
I remember.
Yeah, Dan Wertman was awesome. And so anyway, yeah, he managed to get a lot of his UFO sightings on film. And so, I mean, there is a real documentation of this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I believe that there might be something to, doing the activity of watching with the night vision goggles. I'm not sure if what we did worked to pull it down. What was kind of funny is that these two groups they had different approaches. I'll just put it that way.
Okay.
One group was, we have an alien invasion hiding in our skies, but we can spy on them. And the other group was peace and love, and let's, send good vibes out to space and see what we pull down.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really interesting watching these two groups try to work together with such different approaches. But, I got something out of it. And the strangest thing was that I thought I saw the most interesting thing that night, and everybody just seemed sort of nonplussed at it.
Everybody was bored after an hour and a half, huh?
Yeah, they're like, I saw my dozen satellites. I'm good, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I thought this is why we came out here.
Really?
But, I mean... But it was impressive to me.
Yeah. I have to take one more minute just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And that's 89.3 on the radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Bill Konkoleski, who is the state director for the Michigan chapter of MUFON. And so speaking of... Dr. Greer and the Disclosure Project. Here, a second round of disclosure is coming up in January. Have you heard anything about that?
I've heard mixed things. Mm-hmm. I've actually heard from several sources that what seemed to have worked so well last year with the Stars Academy and Luis Elizondo coming forward about the Pentagon disclosure.
Right.
Well, I mean, I guess grudging Pentagon disclosure, because it wasn't the Pentagon that came out with it.
Who was somebody
that used to work there. Luis Elizondo was a former employee. And he put in his notice and, he went public with the work he'd been doing. I guess it was... Go ahead.
I was going to say, but hasn't the Pentagon... confessed, admitted to this? That they're still studying?
Yeah, certainly, because... Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Harry Reid, who was a big part in making it happen, he says, I stand behind what I did. They claim the budget for it was $22 million, which on one hand is a lot, but when it comes to government spending, maybe not, in the big picture, over 5 years from like 2007 to 2012 is when, they claimed that this project ran, but Elizondo said, they just kept running it afterwards. It just wasn't quite funded the way it was. And,
mm-hmm.
Bigelow got involved in fact, most of the money went to Bigelow for him to do his own studies. But so, you know, it did get, it did loosen the jar a little bit. I'll put it that way. Okay. I don't think that, I mean, when people had discussions about this, it was the same as when I remember previous disclosure events would happen at the National Press Club, and people would say, oh, and a bunch of bunk, whatever. in this case, people are like, oh, that's interesting. And then on to the next whatever piece of news, you know.
Right.
And in the modern era, politics sucks up 90% of the news cycle, you know. So,
well, more than that, more than that.
So it's tough to get any type of story in edgewise. That, and so I think that in previous disclosure attempts, it got dismissed. And in this case, I think the event was this just kind of, huh, that's interesting, and then shrug. But with another round, you know, potentially, hopefully coming out of high-level people coming out and saying, hey, you know, there's something to this, then people will say, oh, yeah, I remember that thing from last year. And, you know, hopefully set in some long-term traction. I guess it loosened the jar a little bit further. And then, you know, I hear that 60% of people now, you know, believe that there's life out there. And so, I mean, it's the majority is on the side of believing something's out there. It's just a matter of proving it to everybody. Yeah. And I think that, you know, if the you know, you could say, well, you know, there didn't seem to be much to it. I mean, if the Pentagon is going to throw millions of dollars at something, you know, there's got to be at least, you know, something to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like advertising, you know. How many times have you seen a product advertised and you've seen it, the commercial, over and over again, and one day you say, oh, is that what they're advertising? Gee, I think I'll try that. It has to be kept in front of the public's eye again and again and again repetitively until it's saturated into their brain. And even though the Pentagon has come out and said, yeah, we've been studying this all along, and yeah, it's real. Here's the what they call the Tic Tac video. Here's what, you know, we've been seeing these things, and we don't know what they are, but they're out there. We don't know if they're from other planets or other dimensions, but they're there. And you keep pounding it into people's heads, and pretty soon they'll say, gee, I guess there is something to it.
Yeah, the irony of the 21st century is, I mean, our technology is just off the charts now. So things are moving ahead so quickly, you can't even catch up with them.
Right.
But what are people doing with the technology? They're doing anything but looking up. They're burying their face in their phone, you know.
Right.
And sitting with family and friends. I mean, I remember at a recent camping event, just looking around the campfire at everybody staring at their phones. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Look at this beautiful night sky. We never see this in the suburbs. Oh my gosh. Oh.
And just go, okay. Just go to the mall and look around. You know, and they walk right into you with these phones, their nose buried in the phones. I guess the idea is to, and you know, YouTube has all these videos. You don't know what is real and what is not. It's kind of hard to weed it out. And I guess that's MUFON's job to weed it out. But the idea is for MUFON to keep their eyes on the sky and take these videos, put them on YouTube, and put them on people's phones. And while they're looking down at their phones, they're seeing what we see up in the sky. What do you think?
I don't know.
Well, that just dropped dead, didn't it?
Well, I mean, for a few seconds, there's that interest, like, huh, okay.
Yeah.
And then on to the next thing.
That's right.
You know, the politicians said what? The politicians did what? I don't know.
And can you believe it?
I just don't know what to do, you know, anymore. But, you know, I'm still as excited as when I got involved. You know, I mean, well, I've been I've been in into the phenomena, and the phenomena has been into me my whole life. So,
right.
I mean, I just, you know, you can't get it out of my blood, but so many people out there have the luxury of disbelief that, you know, if they don't want to pay attention to something, you know, they don't have to, and they live in their quarantine, isolated.
They've never had a sighting. They've never had an abduction. God bless them for that. But so they don't have to put their time and efforts into it. So I guess you and I are preaching to the choir, aren't we?
Yeah. I'm kind of tickled by the expression for non-experiencers. I heard somebody call them muggles. I thought that was kind of funny.
They're the muggles, yeah. I guess so.
One of the hoaxes, I don't know what kind of time we have, but this one hoax.
Got about 4 minutes.
Okay. I'll try to explain this hoax fairly quickly. There was quite a buzz on the internet, YouTube, about this UFO sighting. Somebody had a camera, security camera in their backyard, and you look at the film and you see this sort of weird lasery glowing, you know, really bright light moving around in the sky in a spotlight shooting around the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the and some other people within MUFON were also taking a look at it, but this is what I noticed, that when you look at the spotlight, it's actually, the light isn't splaying down towards the ground, it's splaying upwards.
Mm-hmm.
So what I figured out is it was some guy running around in the backyard shooting a flashlight up into the air,
mm-hmm.
playing this video of that on a big screen television, a flat screen television, and then with a big laser trying to match the laser on the TV screen to where the flashlight was shooting up, while a third camera, another camera, was filming the TV screen.
Oh,
and
wow.
then they put that up, but everybody was like, you know, going gaga over there for a while. I'm like, this is not right. This feels all wrong. And, you know, I'm like, this is somebody using a new tech that nobody's ever seen before. And so we got to figure this out. And, you know, luckily then, you know, put up the, I'm like, this is exactly how it was done. But by that time, YouTube, you know, you can fake a video on and throw it up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It gets tons of hits. And then, you know, the person earns money off of that. And then somebody says, no, it's just a hoax. And they're like, okay, I'll take it down and I'll cash that check.
I'll cash that check. That's right.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah,
it's terrible the way they do that. And, yeah, but there are a few. There are a few that's a real deal. And it's hard to decipher which is which, you know. But that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
But so what's in the future for MUFON? You know,
just keeping going strong, tightening up our investigative game, updating our technology, hoping another book as good as the one that came out this year comes out. I mean, this is all the hard work of investigators collected and edited by Roger Marsh. I mean, this is MUFON's book. This is the whole of the organization.
What is the name?
It is called UFO Cases of Interest.
Okay.
And so the 2018 edition is out right now. And again, it's it was edited by Roger Marsh, who does our MUFON journal.
Right.
And so it's a great job on his part, and a great, great job on behalf of all the investigators that contributed their sightings. Now, all the witness information is taken out of the book, so you're not going to see any real names. But you will see due credit is given to all the investigators.
Mm-hmm. And how about you? Are you do you have another book in the offing?
Maybe.
Oh, don't toy with us, Bill. Don't toy with our emotions.
I'm not trying to be coy. The book I wanted to put out is proving more difficult to put out than I had originally thought it would be.
Mm.
You know, it's a type of thing when you got a wife and kids. And you put out a book, you know, and it, you know, maybe gets some attention. You know, it's not just me in this game. It's, you know, I got to, you know, have the family support if I'm going to put out a book. So I got to choose the topic carefully. So,
all right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So
I got to think of everything.
All right. So where can our listeners go to find out more about your experience as well as MUFON?
Okay, MUFON's website, if you want to report a UFO or you want to become a UFO investigator, is MUFON.com, M-U-F-O-N.com. If you'd like to attend a local meeting here in Michigan, we meet in Burton next to Flint five times a year, and that's M-I-M-U-F-O-N.org, M-I for Michigan, and that's what M-I-M-U-F-O-N.org. And then my personal website that I haven't updated in a while, but it does have a bunch about my book, is experiencer.me, as in .me, me as in myself. So experiencer.me.
Very good. Bill Konkleski.
Or hit me up on Facebook. Send me on Facebook. That'll work too.
Bill Konkleski on Facebook. Everybody's on Facebook. I am not on Facebook. It scares me. So anyway, Bill, I want to thank you so much for joining us again, and I hope we can do this again another time. Okay?
Thank you. I hope
okay.
so too.
And,
thank you so much for having me.
Okay, thank you. And if our listeners have any comments or questions for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum.
The following show was pre-recorded. Guys and dolls, you're at the malt shop with Daddy G here in WHFR Dearborn. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.